Okay, as you can see, we are the two pack checkers. I'm not sure if you would want to trust that guy on the left of the screen. And we both are going to be doing various cells. I'm going to show you the sections. These are the topics that we want to cover, looking at the evidence base for, you need to understand what is good evidence, first of all, and that's what I'm going to cover. Then Mike's going to do avoiding, I'm going to do achieving pregnancy, and we're going to go back and forth. But these are all the topics that we have worked on. I'm not sure we're going to get through it all. We would like to leave at least about 20 minutes for questions on various things, and so this is what we're going to be looking at. A little of my validity, why I'm talking about evidence-based. I've been teaching research, undergraduate, master's level, doctoral level, and postdoctoral level for 35 years at Marquette University. I was also director of research at the College of Nursing for 2.5-3 years. This was my staff at that time. Those are research assistants, statistician who's now at St. Louis University, and I was the chair of all university research at Marquette University, chair of the committee, and so I had to keep up with what is on top of what is going on in research. It was part of my role. So I'm going to talk briefly about evidence-based medicine because we're going to be looking at each of these sections and grading and synthesizing the evidence for all those sections, but you have to have some understanding of evidence-based. Now, as I go to NIH meetings, research meetings every year, these are some of the big hot topics. Most of this is trying to get good research that has been done by good scientists into the hands of the clinicians and then to the patients and the communities to have them to be healthy. There is the translational research, and the federal government had big money, like $15 million for various medical schools, nursing schools, to gather together in cities to develop their translational. They're called clinical translational science institutes. We have one at Marquette University, Medical College of Wisconsin, UWM, the Blood Center, all together working on taking research from the bench to the bedside. But there's called T1, T2, T3, it goes to the community. So all that is involved in getting the research into the hands of the community and also the clinicians. You cannot publish a textbook now in medicine, in nursing, that's clinically based if you don't have evidence-based protocols, evidence-based. That's almost, you have to do that. Another area is what is called comparative effectiveness research. The Institute of Medicine has 100 top priorities looking at interventions, and I'll talk specifically about family planning, looking at comparing various interventions, various drugs, various preventative approaches to tell what is best so the clinicians can best inform our patients. Patient-centered outcomes. If it's not patient-centered, what good is it? If you think you have the best intervention, but it's not useful for the patients for some reason, it's not going to work. That's why this patient-centered or PCORI outcomes, you actually have to have your community, your patients with NFP community, would be all the NFP couples working with you on the intervention and the research. Then scaling up, getting to research into developing poor countries and spreading around, that's other area of research. So those are some of the hot topics going on today. One of the biggest ones is evidence-based medicine, evidence-based healthcare. Evidence-based nursing. We have found out about 30 years ago that most of medicine, most of nursing is not evidence-based. That's one of the reasons. It's only like 30-40%. A lot of it is just trial and error and things like that.
Can you give an example?
So many things that we do in nursing, I know that it's just been, we did it that way. You know, in regards, yeah, Mary Lee. Hormonal replacement therapy for medicine. You know, there was cohort studies in that showing that it's real effective. Until they did a randomized control trial, it was different. So it's just that a lot of what was driven by healthcare and medicine was more based upon the art or, you know, we do it this way with trial and error. So there's big efforts in regards to looking at what is the best evidence. And one of the best approaches of doing that is developing what is called systematic or integrative research reviews. In fact, Mary Lee is the director of the Doctor of Nursing program at St. Louis University, and the DNP degree for nursing is to be the best person to be able to look at the research and synthesize it. So systematic research reviews are summaries of past research, but the reviewers extract, analyze, and integrate findings from peer review, and we'll talk about that, scientific studies that can produce, can aid practice. Systematic reviews are based on a wide and exhaustive, and we'll talk about what is an exhaustive search of existing studies. This is Petra Frank Herman, Dr. Herman from Heidelberg University of Frauen Arts. Dr. Manhart, Mike will be talking a little bit about some of her studies. Source of evidence. Peer review means it's blinded, that we submit it to peer-reviewed journals. You don't have your names. It's taken out, and they send it out to three or four reviewers who review it, who are experts in the area. I get contacted about almost once a week. I just got Human Reproduction asked me to look at something with natural family planning. It's blinded, and these people review it and say whether it's good or not, or where all the areas. And sometimes responding to them, it will be pages and pages and pages of questions that you have to answer. So peer-reviewed scientific journals are the top level where you find your evidence. But then there is a hierarchy. Oh, and then getting into the National Library of Medicine, medical indexes, psych indexes, it's not easy getting into the National Library of Medicine. I'm on the Lineager Quarterly, the journal for the Catholic Medical Association. We applied to get in National Library of Medicine. We didn't make it. It's pages and pages of reviews. You want to get in it because that's where scientists, clinicians go to look for the best studies. So if you're not there, it's lost in a sense. Impact factor. Impact factor means people are reading it and they're citing it. We'll talk about the higher level impact factors. Whenever you're doing comparison trials, in order to get it published, they have to go to clinicaltrials.gov before you actually start your study. Your protocol's got to go in there. If you don't have that, if you don't keep it up, I get notices every 6 months that I'm out of compliance, because you have to keep on updating it, where you're at, how many and you can get into trouble, actually. If you don't have that, you aren't going to get it published. You need to follow standards for randomized control trials, and there's standards for consort, stroke. There's probably about 20 different standards, and there are pages and pages and pages that you need to meet in order to get into these top-level journals. You have to go through IRB review. You have to have letters documenting that you have gone through external review for ethics, human rights, and that's renewed every year. And any little change, you have to make amendments. And I'm constantly doing updating the reviews. This is the impact factor. You can see New England Journal of Medicine is the top impact factor. That means people read it. It means it is cited, articles in it. And other researchers put it into their studies. The top level related to natural family planning, human production, obstetric gynecology. I publish in fertility sterility, and also contraception is down to 14. So you can see the ranking here. And when people publish, they look at what is the impact factor of the journal. If it's not high level, sometimes they don't like to publish it in those journals. Another thing that's happening, as I was talking to Teresa, anybody who publishes at Harvard University goes into their e-library in there at the university. At Marquette, they invite us to have all our publications put into the e-electronic library that it gets into the web, that people hit it. I get a dashboard every year and every month and how many people have clicked on my studies, downloaded my studies, and how many. I'm over like 60, 70,000 now. My number one study was an article in 1992 in Heart and Lung. It was a validation of the nursing diagnosis. And I forgot all about that. I developed some protocols for that. Well, just recently, I was given a fellowship in this International Diagnostics Association. I went down to the conference to get the fellowship. I couldn't stop at the outbreaks without these Brazilian nurses and from Switzerland all over wanting to have pictures with me because they all have to read my article. That's my number one download article. And the professors would come up and everything, and they're using my methodology, and I think, oh, geez. Well, I mean, I like these young women from southern Brazil. But they call me the Brazilian rock star. They're all taking that picture, so that's why I have that. But the point is, to get into that technology, to get into the e-publication, things like that, is where the message is going out. Actually, my second highest downloaded one is the effectiveness of the Creighton model that I did back in the early 90s, too. So steps in research review, selecting the topic, conducting exhaustive search, and there's a big thing, actually having a librarian help you with that, going into all the search engines you should have in your team. Establishing criteria for the best evidence, so you whittle it down. We looked at breastfeeding transition studies. There might be about 200, but if you whittle it down in regards to what are the best studies, it might come down to maybe 20. Making a table of the studies, looking at, analyzing, and then coming up with conclusions and recommendations for practice. Now, there's levels of evidence that you look at as studies. And this is just one. There's all different ones, different levels that people have developed together. But we know that randomized controlled trials, experimental design, are some of the better studies because they control for, they're internally valid, and what that means is that they control for confounding factors that might explain the outcome. And as you go down the list, there's less control for those other explanations, the apple oranges, or, well, this population was more well-off than this population. Maybe that's what did the difference, or maybe it was just a placebo effect. Quasi-experimental study, meta-analysis of grouping of RCTs, that's randomized controlled trials. So there's levels of evidence based on controlling factors. And then what people do, and this is just another example that you can actually Google these images looking at the higher order of evidence. If you look down below, expert opinion is the lowest. Now, that's not going to one individual as an expert. That is usually a committee of experts from a national organization that brings you the expertise. Then you grade the research, and we have a grading here, strong A, strong good scientific B, mixed or conflicting C, strong negative evidence D, and then F is lack of evidence. Now, Mike and I are going to have a grade for each of these levels, and you can see who you would like to be your teacher for a grading after we're done with this. clinical trials, I'm not going to get into. This was on last Sunday's New York Times, and it's talking about clinical trials, and you have all these various phases of trials. Phase two, you do a randomized control and you show differences. Then you go into a larger study. Drug companies, Mike knows about this, drug companies love to get this significant changes in trial two. But then three is not as easy because if they get in three, then they can sell this drug and get an FDA approved. But what happens in phase two, you have these more healthy, younger people. Finally, they go to a larger population with older, more sicker people. They don't find the results. And NFP studies, we'll be looking at that. Most of our NFP studies are done with Catholic, white, pretty well-off, educated people. That means we cannot generalize, it's not externally valid, to the entire population of people that we want to get to. I talked a little bit about comparative effectiveness research. The Institute of Medicine has the top 100. One of them in the top 25 is the effort to compare effectiveness of innovative strategies for preventing unintended pregnancies. While I'm looking at for natural family planning, we should be looking at what works best for which couples for achieving and avoiding and under what circumstances is of interest to those health providers and who provide or refer for a moral integrative approach to family planning. Not easy to do, however. One of the best known types of review are called the Cochrane Review, and this is Archie Cochrane who started this whole movement. And you can go to www.cochrane and you can see there's manuals and how you actually carry out these reviews. Well, there's a Dr. David Grimes who's very famous in the contraceptive literature. He keeps up with a group of people the efficacy of natural family planning, and you can click on this. And he has the Cochrane Review for the efficacy of fertility awareness or natural family planning. However, he has whittled it down to randomized controlled trials because that's the top of the level. These are the studies. And essentially they come up and say, well, we really don't know the effectiveness. There's not a lot of good studies. And essentially it's saying it's not real effective.